Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver, and this is the In the War on Drugs, They Just Bombed Our Hospital show. Let me explain to you what I'm talking about.
We are, in fact, losing
the war on drugs. This was March 31st, 2016, at the 5th National Prescription Drug Abuse and Heroin Summit. The CDC Director Tom Frieden highlighted two statistics. There have been 500,000 drug overdoses in the U.S. since 1999. That's more casualties than suffered in World War II, Korean War, and Vietnam Wars combined. And those were some pretty heavy casualty wards. 500,000 drug overdoses. In 2013, U.S. healthcare providers wrote 249 million prescriptions for narcotics, enough for every American to have a bottle of narcotics. That was in 2013. Our numbers have not decreased much. The reason I mentioned they just bombed our hospital, this was May 17th at the International Meeting of the American Thoracic Society. They looked at hospital narcotic overdose death rates among ICU patients in the U.S. The death rates have been increasing by 0.5% every month since 2009. That is, we, with all of our ICU ventilators and so forth, have not been able to stop deaths from increasing. They looked at 4.9 million in ICU admissions, more than 200 hospitals, a 46% increase in ICU admissions for drug overdoses during that period from 2009 to 2015, an 86% increase in narcotic deaths. So in essence, our ICUs cannot save our citizens from dying from drug overdoses. These are horrendous numbers. We see them daily here in eastern Kentucky. Kentucky has been very courageous. Actually, we've been very forward-thinking in trying to address this legislatively. I give all the credit to our legislature for the courage they had in trying to address it. But I will tell you, as a person who looks at these numbers, it does not appear that it worked. Our overdose death rates, in fact, are the same as before we enacted comprehensive legislation. This is a very, very tough beast to slay. We'll talk some more about drugs during our show, but I wanted to explain why I titled the show, They Just Bombed Our Hospital. Hospitals have not been able to make advances in treating overdose deaths the way we do in treating deaths due to Zika virus or Ebola or things like that. We're absolutely, literally dead in the water. Speaking of dead in the water...
Hello.
A great transition.
It's another new
week. See how I did that segue? I just rode the segue right into the lake. The manager of the University of Kentucky Communications Infrastructure is Rick Phillips, sitting here beside me awaiting an opportunity to tell you how to access us on the World Wide Web. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. And I'm just glad to hear your charming voice this week, because after last week making so much fun of the president, I thought for sure we were going to be off the air.
We had some issues last week. I think we put them behind us, and we're ready. First of all, we have been instructed firmly that there will be no fart jokes until the second fractional portion, and I'm going to actually abide by that.
Wasn't
I don't know
that
about you.
One in itself right there? Didn't you just violate that by telling that?
Oh gosh!
Because really, for the eighth grade males, all you have to do is say
just
it,
say
right?
the word.
You just have to
it
say
is
the word.
The word that
I mean, there are people driving down the road right now chuckling.
All right, because, World Wide Web. Hit it, Rick.
Yeah, there you go. Find us on the web, wmky.org. That is Morehead State Public Radio's website. You know, I'd love to tell you exactly what to click on and go where, but somewhere on that page there's a menu. That page is beautiful, and it has changed a couple times, so I'm pretty sure it's right in the middle of the page. There's a nice, pretty menu. Find Health Matters. Find the list of shows. Read some of the show summaries. We have them in chronological order. We have some of the more recent shows. We give you a paragraph of Tony's little quips on what might or might not be in the show, although I will give you a hint. He does do those summaries after the show, so they're sometimes pretty accurate because he does kind of remember what he talked about. It's one of the good qualities. After you listen to the show on that website, jump over to Facebook, facebook.com/HMRadioShow. Yeah, you know, I have to say this because, you know, I have two college-age daughters, but they're past the Facebook stuff, right? But we're so Facebook. We're so old that Facebook still is good.
Listen,
for us.
We're talking on the radio, which actually antedated Facebook.
Well, maybe, but we like Facebook, right?
Yeah,
you log
what
into
could,
it.
What could be more old-fashioned than just sitting down and talking on the radio? So Facebook is actually very modern for us compared to what we actually
The problem
do
is
the
our
show.
Kids are more modern than that now, right? They've moved on. They're Snapchat, Instagram. They're doing all kinds of crazy stuff, probably more than I'm even naming. Anyway, Facebook.com. Don't get me derailed. facebook.com/HMRadioShow. Interact with the show. Tell us what you think. Shoot us some show topics. Look at some of the information we put up there. We try to post stuff that sometimes it's on the show. Sometimes it just comes across our desk in our normal daily jobs, and it's just worthy of going up for Health Matters listeners. We just want you to enjoy that content. Again, it's your chance to interact with Health Matters. We have quite a few people that follow it and like it, and then we get some that are more involved than others. We encourage you to get involved.
They follow it, but they don't like it.
Well, they like it, and then they follow it.
Okay.
Clearly, you need a refresher.
Okay, I'm sorry. I've got the whole Facebook
thing. That would be
down.
A refresher on facebook.com/HMRadioShow.
Our sponsor for today's show, the 10 deadliest cancers in the U.S. Try your best, and if you can, if you get cancer, avoid these 10.
What did you just say?
All right, here's the motto.
You
try
said
your
like
best,
three sentences that meant nothing.
And if you can, if you get cancer, avoid these 10. The 10 deadliest cancers in the U.S., we're going to list them during this show. New York Times Magazine, May 12, 2016, 10 cancers in 8 organs account for 70% of new cancer cases in the U.S.
What?
According to the American Cancer Society.
70?
70% of new cancer cases, 10 cancers account for that.
Wow.
So when you think, oh, you could get cancer of anything, that's true, but you will not get cancer of your fingernail.
Right.
And so that's out. That doesn't happen. Hair
but
cancer,
what do you think
very
of that,
rare.
Though? What do you think of that, though, Tony? I mean, the 10 we're talking about are pretty prominent, right? I mean, I'm sure lung, colorectal, you know.
Look at you just knocking them out.
I mean, I'm sure that there's probably pancreatic, you know, breast.
Not bad, Rick.
What is it? Let me think of another one.
Look
here.
At
with
you
the male.
Go. What, keep in mind.
The shoot.
Oh, prostate?
Yeah, prostate.
Yep.
Thank you. And then you probably got melanoma. How many have I gotten?
Not bad.
Six of 10? Am I 6 of 10?
Well, you'll just have to wait to our second fractional portion. I'm not going to validate that till then.
Nice.
Thank you very much. Cancers in the order of occurrence, along with an estimated number of the deaths at each one, that's what we're going to do next fractional portion. The relative 5-year survival for all cancers back in 1975, 49%. That is, if you had the diagnosis of cancer, any type of cancer, the 5-year survival, 49%.
Flip a coin.
Liver die.
Your liver die.
Yeah. It has since moved up to 68% all cancers.
Wow.
And there are a couple of cancers, very prominent cancers, that are lagging behind.
A direct result of you, Tony, the tireless doctors and researchers in this country have done. You are directly responsible for that.
You know, in all seriousness.
I'm being serious. I
know,
really do appreciate it.
From my standpoint, it's an honor to be linked with the healthcare system that has done that. We have a lot of work to do, and the biggest gains we could make are outside the laboratory. They are in becoming more physically active, watching our weight, and not smoking or putting toxins into our system.
But really, more than anything, I just need our listeners to realize that I really don't think you're bozo.
All right.
Last week, I was pretty hard on you with
bozo. Last week, Rick called me a bozo.
No. I called you a bozo several times.
He did. And we have not actually spoken since our last radio show. And so now, I understand. At some point, you have to make this up.
Hey, wasn't that a fairly sincere way to do it, though?
It sounded good, because we had a serious moment, and then we kept moving. If you are 70 years old, and a man, your chances of being diagnosed with cancer by age 70, 1 in 3. For
well,
a woman,
well, if you live to 90, it's going to be prostate cancer.
Absolutely. By the pretty the message that I got in medical school was by mid 80s, every man has prostate cancer, whether it's diagnosed or not, something in their prostate that looks like cancer. But remember
it's
these numbers.
It's just not fatal,
right? 1 in 3 men, 1 in 4 women by age 70 will receive the diagnosis of some type of cancer, skin cancer, prostate cancer, a more serious cancer possibly.
So Tony, are you going to, when you get to be 70, are you going to try to find 2 friends that have cancer and hang around them?
Yeah, sure.
Is that what you're going to do?
As we get better at treating heart disease, those rates are actually probably going to go up. Cancer is going to be the battle because heart disease rates are dropping so rapidly. It's still, in some states, heart disease is still the number one cause of death. In the state of Kentucky, cancer is now the number one cause of death, and the gap will widen rather dramatically. Here are your 5 deadliest cancers ranked by 5-year survival rate. The 5 deadliest cancers, the 5-year survival rate for brain cancer, 31%. The 5-year survival rate for stomach cancer, 30%. And by the way, I don't know where I got 5. I'm looking at 6 columns here, but I thought it was 5. But anyway. Brain cancer, 31%. Stomach cancer, 30%. Esophageal cancer. This is a nasty cancer.
Right.
It makes it difficult to swallow. It is very hard to treat. You get radiation. You get very sick. 18% five-year survival rate. Liver cancer, also 18% five-year survival rate. That means you take 100 people with liver cancer, 18 of them will be alive in 5 years after the diagnosis. Lung cancer, 18% five-year survival rate. This is a frustrating thing. A very common cancer, 150,000 cases a year, 18% five-year survival rate, the leading cause of cancer death, by far lung cancer. And then, as you mentioned, Rick, a really nasty one, pancreatic cancer is an 8% five-year survival rate. It happens to older people. It grows right next to your aorta and some of the nerves that go out to your stomach, and it is very, very, very early on. It gets involved with those nerves and arteries, and you can't cut it out. You can't kill it with chemotherapy. Pancreatic cancer, 8% five-year survival rate, the lowest among the common cancers.
And one thing I was going to say, and there's been a few celebrities that have died of pancreatic cancer. I think it's been
Patrick prominent. Swayze Patrick was Swayze. One of my favorite all-time actors died of pancreatic cancer.
Roadhouse. I mean, how can you not channel surf?
I'm sorry.
Come to Roadhouse.
You can do Roadhouse if you want to. Dirty Dancing was Patrick Swayze at his best. I liked it better than
Ghost. Hey, that's not really true. Nobody, come on.
Patrick Swayze died of pancreatic cancer, 8% five-year survival rate. Where are the good, this is an odd thing, where are the good cancers? There aren't any, but here are the most survivable cancers. I've got six of them, highest survival rates. Hodgkin lymphoma.
Really?
Yes, Hodgkin lymphoma, 86% five-year survival rate. 100 people with that, 14 are going to die in 5 years.
Now, the next one, you're going to go up the ladder, I would have known.
Breast cancer.
Yes.
Now, breast cancer, the problem is, can last longer than 5 years. So being 5 year survival rate doesn't mean you're clean and clear. But 90% of those diagnosed with breast cancer are alive at 5 years. Melanoma, 92% 5 year survival rate. We're pretty good at treating
that. Well, that's for the most part, you can see them, you cut them, you get them early, right? I mean,
yeah.
For the most part, you get those early.
Testicular cancer, Lance Armstrong disease, 95% survival rate.
Is that just because it's not very aggressive, or is it?
No, you is in just, fact, it's actually pretty aggressive. It's spreading, but man, you give that chemotherapy and radiation therapy, and it evaporates.
Gotcha.
I mean, it's
very treatable. Huh?
Yeah, it is. Thyroid cancer, 98%. Prostate cancer, 99%. And the reason, as I said, many old men have prostate cancer. We've overdiagnosed it. We treated a lot of cancer that didn't need to be treated.
So this is the list you want your doctor citing if they're sitting in a room telling you you have cancer.
Right. Now, that is our sponsor. And thanks to Rick not really getting with the program, we never got past the sponsor this fractional portion.
So can I pick on you in the next fractional portion?
I'm very disappointed. You've been listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio. We're going to take a break.
Hello, and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is in the war on drugs. They just bombed our hospital. 500,000 deaths due to drugs since 1999, and unfortunately, our in-hospital mortality is getting worse. Now, that's not because we're not treating people as well. They're coming in with combinations of drugs that turn out to be harder to treat. The discouraging thing is, unlike Ebola, unlike other diseases, this is one where we are not getting any better at our treatments. We're throwing our best efforts at it. In fact, we're not making any progress.
Seems like we were just talking about this.
Yeah, that was in the first fractional portion.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Thanks for waking me up.
Sorry. Our sponsor for the second time, the 10th. I don't know where you're going. The 10 deadliest cancers in the United States. Try your best, and if you get cancer, avoid these 10. The 10
the
cancers.
Is you wrote that.
I know. I wrote it.
That is, you are the author. Lead author.
Do you think so? It's not Shakespeare? I'm not so sure. Okay.
Kind of brought a tear to my eye.
Yeah, I understand. Here's your top 10, not necessarily the deadliest, but the top 10 most common cancers. These cancers, again, these 10 cancers.
Are we going to acknowledge which of the six I got right?
70% of new cancer cases. Yeah. Well, first of all the first three. Breast cancer, 250,000 cases in last year, 40,000 deaths. Again, survival 90% at 5 years. The most common symptom, lumps in the breast, tumors usually benign, meaning they will not move. Most of the things we biopsy are that, but there are some malignant tumors that expand. Lung cancer, again, 250,000 breast cancer, 224,000 lung cancer, and the death rate. Breast cancer death, 40,000 deaths. Lung cancer, as I mentioned, 158,000. Survival 18%. The third one, you nailed this one as well. Prostate cancer, 180,000. deaths. I'm sorry, 180,000 cases, 26,000 deaths. So survival 99%. We do very well. We diagnose a lot of it. We wind up not much of it killing. You mentioned the next one. I think you got it pretty well. Colon and rectal cancer, 134,000 cases with 50,000 deaths. Survival 5 years, 65%. This is the one you didn't get, and
Now, in fairness to me now, I only said six. And I had zero wrong and six right.
And you, the first four, the top four, breast at 250,000, lung at 224,000, prostate at 180,000, colon and rectum at 135,000, you nailed all those. 81,000 is the next one, and that is cancers of the lymphatic system. Those are lymphomas, essentially. That's 81,000. 20,000 deaths, survival 73%. Again, the Hodgkin's lymphoma does pretty well. Here's one you wouldn't have thought about, bladder cancer, a common cancer, 76,000 cases, 16,000 deaths, 78% survival.
Yeah, that was a tough one. You know, and the thing is Tony, I guess maybe that one was a little too close to home because my father-in-law died of bladder cancer.
Yeah. Heavier in smokers. This was something that really, I'll tell you, Rick, it actually bothered me. I figured with the problems with heavy metals and pollution down in southeastern Kentucky, bladder cancer rates would be abnormally high. There is not a clear trace in the National Cancer Institute data about bladder cancer in southeastern Kentucky. The statistics are hard to come by, but I don't see any blip in the cases of bladder cancer in southeastern Kentucky, and I thought certainly I would see that. One, as I said, it's smoking related. There's heavy smoking down there. Two, of the problems they have with mountaintop removal and water pollution. I just thought I'd see more bladder cancer. Didn't do that. Next up, you mentioned it, melanoma, 76,000 cases. Thyroid, 64,000 cases. Kidney, 62,000. Blood cancers, leukemia, 60,000. Those are your top 10 cancers. We'll talk more about them in our next fractional portion. You can see I'm moving on because we spent so much time on our sponsor. Now, here is...
Well, we only spent the entire first fractional portion, right?
That's right. And remember the motto, if I can get through it, try your best, and if you can, if you get cancer, avoid these 10. This was... I put this on the Facebook page, Rick, and you may have seen it. This was from the International Journal of Surgery Case Reports. It was April 2016, and it came from the Department of Surgery at the Adelaide and Meath Hospital, Dublin Incorporating, the National Children's Hospital in Dublin, Ireland. This was a 29-year-old prisoner who presented to the emergency room with vomiting 10 hours after he claimed to have swallowed his cell phone.
Swallowed his cell phone. Was it flip phone?
No.
Holy cow.
I know. Now, here's the thing is, Rick knows exactly the import of this. For those of you who are not driving your cars right now, if you have your cell phone nearby, I want you to do an exercise. I want you to take that cell phone and let's just walk through swallowing the cell phone whole. This is the first case in the medical literature of someone who was able to swallow a cell phone. Now, this man, I would just say, was not right. He had significant mental illness, but he also had prodigious physical talent to be able to swallow a cell phone whole. Honestly, well... Amazing. So they took x-rays, and there in his stomach was a cell phone. It sat there in the, we call it the fundus. That's the sort of the leftmost part of the stomach. It's sitting there. It's not moving. They waited a day to see if it would move. Now, the thing about these cell phones, they have all sorts of stuff you do not want to digest.
No.
Heavy metals.
Very heavy metals.
Toxic. The batteries are lithium. This thing
yeah,
would.
Yeah,
you would, yeah. You would eat through it, whereupon it would immediately
plus,
eat
plus
through you.
Let's be honest. Even if you're lucky enough to get it to go down the first way, I can't imagine the rest of the path would be much fun.
Right. And they didn't say what prompted this young man. They just mentioned that he did have a number of psychiatric problems. I don't understand that, but okay. They didn't give him any food because he had the cell phone. They looked at 18 hours after he ingested it, and this thing was absolutely dead in his stomach, not moving the slightest bit. If you go to our Facebook page, you can see a picture of the x-ray of the man's stomach with a cell phone up in the top. And again, not a small cell phone, a huge piece of electronic equipment sitting in this guy's stomach. Now, the protocols are pretty standard for foreign bodies. When you swallow something, they use a scope. They go down with an endoscope. The problem is that endoscope was not designed to fish out a cell phone and bring it back up your esophagus.
Ouch.
I am amazed the guy got it down there. There was only one other case of trying to eat the cell phone before, and it got stuck in their throat. They had to remove it surgically, but it did not even make it down the esophagus, and this one's sitting in the guy's stomach. This had to hurt. If you've ever swallowed a big piece of meat.
But think about it, though. What if he got a call?
Ate a peanut butter.
Wouldn't that be annoying? You see, you can't answer it.
This, but I've seen
poking on his belly.
Now wait a second. I have seen this on cartoons. I know exactly how you handle
get a Bluetooth headset. You can still take that call.
What do you think? I just wondered if maybe he was thinking, you know, if I can get this.
Can you imagine if you left it on vibrate?
If I can poop this cell phone out, then I've got me a cell phone in prison. It's the only. Or maybe he was hallucinating or something like that. I don't know. You know, you had a bad radio show last week. You might have swallowed a cell phone accidentally during
that. No, I certainly didn't.
But I don't know if he did it on purpose or not. But the idea, that must have, if you've ever eaten a peanut butter sandwich quickly, or if you've ever gotten a piece of less than completely chewed meat in your esophagus, you know, this hurts. It cramps. It actually physically hurts. Right. And to imagine a cell phone going down the esophagus, this young man has a pain threshold much higher than mine.
It gives a whole new meaning to having a big mouth.
Yeah. You know, and I haven't tried putting my cell phone in my mouth. I might be able to get my mouth. But you think about bending it around and starting it down your esophagus. I can't imagine it. I'm sorry, I cannot imagine it. Back to the case. They put an endoscope down. They used every attachment they had on the endoscope, and they couldn't get it out.
Right.
It's like, you know what it's
like? Could they at least see how many messages he had?
Okay, if you're keeping score from home, you got to add one to Rick's column at that point. But getting it out was sort of like, you know, that game that you've got where that you have the claw and you go down and you try to pick up a very expensive stuffed animal.
Well, or a $3 stuffed animal, yeah.
Yeah, and the thing just simply won't grasp it. Well, in the same way, the endoscope, they were essentially playing the claw game with the cell phone. There was no way that cell phone was coming up the
esophagus
backwards.
Yeah, but they didn't have to pay a quarter each time. It was probably more like $200.
Hey, get out of the way. Let Henry try it. Look at this, you know, and you keep getting, you know, whatever that thing is that you don't want, you know, you keep getting like a little cheap nothing at all, a fake coin or something like that. Well, I don't know what they were getting out of his stomach, but it was not the cell phone. And so finally they had to make a small incision in his abdomen and actually go in and remove the phone surgically. They stitched it up. He did fine physically afterwards. Obviously a man with a great deal of problems. The first case in the history of the medical literature of a person swallowing intact a cell phone. And it was, I'm looking here, what's this picture? It's, I don't recognize the brand name.
Uh-oh, here comes the joke.
Well, it looks like Long GI, which is exactly what happened to him. But at any rate, there sits the cell phone. Rick, if you know that brand, I'm passing it over to Rick. Surgery is actually, for most foreign bodies, less than 1% of the time they'd have to have surgery. In most cases, they will either pass it. And I had our kids swallow coins. They would do that. There was a case report. If your child does swallow coins, the standard thing to do is to x-ray the coins and make sure that they go through, but you don't do anything, you don't have to do anything different than that. One person who had a metal detector, he was one of these guys that likes to go along the beach. He used the metal detector to follow the coins, and that was actually safer for his kid than getting repeat x-rays. It reduced the radiation dose, which was pretty, I have to admit, pretty clever, pretty innovative. Of course, the standard thing that we mentioned in the emergency room is, do you notice any change in your bowel movements, which is kind of funny if you swallowed some change. But back to this case, you know, there was absolutely no way this was going to pass through. Here's some things that you do not sit on. If your child swallows a battery, that is a serious thing. As I said, a partially digested battery will leak out stuff and begin digesting your child. Do not, under any circumstances, sit on a possibility of a swallowed battery. We can usually do a plain x-ray and see what it whether it looks like a battery or not. But you do not want to take a chance on that. The other thing that has been a big problem is those magnets, those neodymium magnets. Those things, as they go around the loops of bowel, you get one magnet in one loop and one magnet in another loop, and they pinch together, and they wind up actually causing damage to the bowel, and you have to have emergency surgery. So magnets and batteries are two things that will never work. Ordinarily, pocket change and things like that that is non-magnetic and doesn't have dangerous chemicals in it, we will attempt to see if it'll pass through. The other possibility is if it doesn't pass through, you can retrieve it with a scope. There is apparently no device that you can attach to a scope right now that will enable you to bring a cell phone back upwards. And to be honest with you, Rick, even if they could have gotten a pair of vice grips on that thing, dragging that back up the esophagus probably would cause more damage than just cutting the guy open.
I was thinking that too. This is one of those go phone kind of things. It's kind of long. It is, in fact, you know, narrower than, say, an iPhone, right? So it's just a little bit narrower than an iPhone, but it's thicker. It's probably three times the thickness of an iPhone.
Yeah, and I mean, people swallow swords, so you know you can swallow a long, flat object.
But this is wide.
It is wide. It is like a broadsword. Well, it's short. It's not anything at all like a broadsword. I don't know why I even said that. But the point is, you can swallow flat objects. I suppose he had to tilt his head back and look up at the ceiling. It's not like you just put this. It's not like he was sucking on his cell phone and oops, he swallowed it. Nothing. This required a considerable amount of planning, I believe.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, this wasn't something that accidentally happened.
This. Yeah, there's absolutely no way. Are you finished with this? Do you have any other? Because you are, in fact, the communications guy for University of Kentucky.
I'm out of jokes, and there's not much I can do with a cell phone that's in somebody's belly.
Okay.
Right?
Well,
I mean,
I appreciate you identifying the cell phone. I had no idea. I'm looking at this, and I did not recognize it.
But it looks like some kind of a Go phone. I mean, it's definitely not any kind of a. It doesn't have the big, huge LCD screen. It almost reminds you a little bit of a narrow BlackBerry.
Okay.
So the old original BlackBerries, but it's not a BlackBerry. It's something different.
Check it out on you can look at the x-ray and actually the photo that they took in the operating room on our Facebook page. You got to see this because this is a once-in-history event of a guy swallowing his cell phone. Rick, how much time we got left? Do I have enough time to insult my wife?
Oh, you got tons of time for that.
Okay.
And frankly, Tony, it's going to take you a long time to do that because you have to think really hard. She's
my wife
a wonderful woman.
Is a paragon of virtue. My wife is the sensible one of the two of us. My wife, I love her and I worship her. The other day we were in a restaurant,
but
and she always gets unsweet tea. She is not southern enough to get sweet tea. She does not like the carbs and the sugar in the sweet tea. She rarely gets soft drinks anymore, although she and I used to drink soft drinks quite a bit. She gets unsweet tea. She got her unsweet tea and she didn't get a straw, and that's unusual at a restaurant because everybody gets straws at a restaurant.
Right.
I said, "What are you doing?" She said, "I heard that straws make your lips wrinkle."
She heard that.
Yes.
Was she listening? Was she two-timing you and listening to another health radio show?
Straws cause wrinkling of the face of the lips. Now, immediately, of course, you know how it is with a cell phone. There's no longer anything left in doubt. You have to, if it's not in your stomach, you take this cell phone and you try to prove the other person is right or wrong. So I was going to go and prove to her that there is no scientific data that straws cause wrinkling of the lips. Here's the thing, though, Rick. According to leading dermatologists, straws, drinking from a straw, causes wrinkling of the lips.
It does.
Now, we are not a big dermatology-centered show. We, in fact, avoid this type of garbage as much as we can. But at this point, it's hit home. It's personal. I have to talk about this because my wife was not going to drink from a straw because it would make her lips wrinkle, even though she's never really worried that much about things like that. Plastic surgery is not is out of the question. It's just not. She's very happy with who she is, I guess, as long as her lips don't get wrinkled. I don't know.
I can't believe that you would go to that kind of depth to bring up something like this. I
mean, Huffington Post.
What did she do to deserve this?
She didn't use a straw. And she had.
I haven't used a straw my entire life for the most part. I do them every once in a while.
You're a non-straw guy.
No, I never like straws.
But I'm going to hit you. You just wait. This story is going to envelop you.
You better not hit me.
Yeah, this is going to get bigger and bigger as we go through this story. Huffington Post, August of 2012. Two dermatologists, Dr. Heather Woolery Lloyd. Certainly, I would see Heather Woolery Lloyd for my dermatologic problems. She is the founder of Specific Beauty. And Dr. Rebecca Baxt, yes, they said, repeated straw drinking causes people to purse their lips, and that can create wrinkles from the repetitive muscle motion, much like frowning causes wrinkles the upper face. But Dr. Heather Woolery Lloyd is wary of placing all the blame on drinking straws. You got to realize, drinking straws don't get all of the blame from Dr. Heather Woolery Lloyd.
It's easy for you to say.
Yeah, I know. It's not at all. In general, drinking through a straw should not cause wrinkles. However, any repetitive movement can increase the risk of wrinkles. So now we're getting some equivocation from our dermatologic expert. Someone who sips through a straw daily, not Rick Phillips, or less often, such as once a week, shouldn't be a problem. If you look at smoking, this is where this goes really bizarre for me. Smoking causes wrinkles for two reasons. One is it destroys your skin tissue. There's a problem. It creates free radicals, which damage the skin. And you can tell which of your friends, by my age, I can tell which of my friends smoke because I can look at their face. There's something called smoker's facies, which is that characteristic extra wrinkling caused by smokers. But number two, besides the fact that it destroys your skin, is the repetitive movement of pursing the lips to inhale the cigarette, according to the dermatologist. Heavy smokers purse their lips 5 minutes 20 times or more per day. So if we used a straw 20 drinks a day, it would wrinkle your lips.
Do you use a straw with 20 drinks a day?
20 drinks a day. I'll use it for the first 15 to 17, and then I think, oh, that's too much straw, and I don't even count, but certainly not. If someone pursed their lips to use a straw for 100 minutes a day, we're still at the Huffington Post, like a smoker, they would have the same effects as a smoker. I don't think, says Dr. Baxt, once a week would be a problem, but in people who are prone to lip and mouth wrinkles, I tell them to avoid straws altogether. So according to these two well-known dermatologists, drinking through a straw purses your lips and causes wrinkles. Okay?
If you say so.
And Rick, he's feeling good now. Here's the thing.
I've never really drank a lot out of straws.
August 2013, the American Society for Aesthetic Plastic Surgery. These are the plastic surgery experts. There is a condition they call water bottle mouth. I'll say it again because it's great. Water bottle
mouth. Looks like you have that.
Facial wrinkles occur because people lose their skin elasticity as they age. And if you don't use sunscreen, if you do repetitive motions like squinting your eyes. But if you drink from a water bottle, you purse your mouth to get around the mouth of the water bottle. And Rick, you purse your mouth when you drink from bottles.
Okay.
You are going to have water bottle mouth. I am sorry to tell your children this.
I'm already
married,
so it doesn't
matter. Are going to take care of their father with water bottle mouth. How do you treat water bottle mouth?
Go get one and try it out.
You either pour it into a cup or, and here's the kicker, Rick, you treat water bottle mouth by drinking through a straw. We're going to let you think about the irony of that during our break, and we're going to come back with our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Have a glass of water. Boy, that was a good drink. This is the third.
I knew you could not leave that alone.
This
I just knew it.
This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. We've all had our water bottle or straw drink. My name is Rick Phillips. This is a third and final fractional portion.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver, as we call Rick, water bottle mouth, which is, by the way, it's a really nice phrase to use. Water bottle mouth. That's an insult, but it is
okay,
also
straw
apparently.
Sucker.
Apparently is actually a disease. My name is Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the End the War on Drugs. They just bombed our hospital show. We are talking about the fact that we lost 500,000 U.S. citizens to drug overdoses since 1999. And in addition to that, our ICU outcomes are actually worsening. Not because our ICUs are not as good as they used to be, but simply because we are unable to make any progress at all in treating drug overdoses. And in fact, people are overdosing on more deadly combinations of drugs than they did in the past. This is just an absolute nightmare for those of us in rural Kentucky, which is ground zero for this sort of thing. And in fact, across the country now, we have this problem. Our sponsor, for the final time, the 10 deadliest cancers in the United States. Try your best, and if you can, if you get cancer, avoid these 10. I'll talk to you about 6 with the lowest survival rates. Brain cancer, 31% 5-year survival rate. Stomach cancer, 30% 5-year survival rate. Esophageal, 18%. Liver, 18%. Lung, 18%. And pancreatic cancer, of the common cancers, the absolute worst, 8% of people who are diagnosed with pancreatic cancer are alive in 5 years. The best prognosis cancers. At 86%, Hodgkin lymphoma, a bit of a surprise. Breast cancer, 90%. That is because a lot of things we diagnosed as breast cancer probably were not going to do anything anyway. We're over-treating breast cancer, and we'll talk more about that with prostate cancer, which is coming up. Melanoma, 92%, 5-year survival rate. Testicular cancer, 95%. Thyroid, 98%. And the single best cancer in terms of 5-year survival rate, prostate cancer, 99% survival rate. But the thing about prostate cancer, again, is we, in the past, when these statistics were compiled, were diagnosing way too many prostate cancers. We were diagnosing things that were not in any way going to hurt people and calling them cancer, and then we looked good on our 5-year survival rates. Let's go over the 10 most common cancers that are 70% of all cancers diagnosed. Breast cancer, lung cancer, prostate cancer, colon and rectal cancer, cancers of the lymphatic system, these are the lymphomas, bladder cancer, melanoma, thyroid cancer, kidney cancer, and blood cancer, leukemia. Those are your 10 cancers that are 70% of all cancer deaths, new cancer cases, sorry, in the United States, according to estimates from the American Cancer Society. Now, I want to close out this water bottle mouth straw thing. I've got just a couple I mentioned, again, if you pucker up for anything, and I asked my wife, I said, look, if this straw is going to give you wrinkles, are you going to kiss me? Not with a wrinkle mouth. I'm saying, you know, the act of kissing someone also obviously involves puckering the mouth, as does eating lemons. When are you going to stop this? How much do you care about your lip wrinkles that you are willing to change your behavior? She had no answer for that, of course, because it was a stupid question. But still, I did ask it. This is Dr. Marilyn Berzin, by both her peers and her patients, one of Washington, D.C.'s leading cosmetic dermatologists. She has been named one of the region's top doctors by Washingtonian Magazine. She's an associate clinical professor in the Department of Dermatology and Medicine at George Washington University Medical Center, certified by the American Board of Dermatology, fellow of numerous professional organizations. You get the drift. This is a prominent dermatologist. She says, wrinkles caused by drinking out of water bottles isn't unlike the problem smokers have been facing for decades. She said it only takes around 2 years of repetitive motion for deep lines to set in. Here is the quote that I wanted to leave you with and the reason that I brought up the silliness in the first place. According to Dr. Marilyn Berzin, one of Washington, D.C.'s leading cosmetic dermatologists, when you're drinking from a water bottle, you're pretty much making the same face as you are when you're smoking a cigarette. Some experts, says this article, some experts believe drinking from bottles is the equivalent of smoking 3 packs of cigarettes a day. I am not one of those experts.
Fine.
That is absurd.
Yeah.
Drinking water from a bottle is the equivalent of smoking 3 packs of cigarettes a day. I'm not, you know, I could get mad, but that's so silly. I'm not going to get mad. I'm just going to move on. I had to read that because that's where the water bottle mouth thing went.
You're the one who brought it on the show.
I know. I regret
it
already.
How did you read that and not, you know, that's crazy.
I got mad. Well, see, it started again. My wife said, I'm not eating a straw. I'm not going to use a straw because it might make my lips wrinkle. I thought, that's not a very.
Did you tell her, what do you mean might?
Yeah. And now I put it on the radio show. So, Rick, if you've got a spare bedroom, I would appreciate it.
I have
it's
a dog.
It's not going to go well for me tonight.
I have a barn.
Okay. We're going to stay with the dermatology, actually. This is from the.
It's that kind of show.
AMA Journal of Ophthalmology. And this was also in the May issue. They were talking about automobile side windows. I did not know this, but they had a researcher using a meter to measure UVA light from these side windows. 29 automobiles made from 1990 to 2014. The front windshield, which is thicker and sometimes made to block UVA light, it blocked 96% of UVA light. You will not sunburn, or it will be very hard to sunburn through your front windshield. But if the sun comes through the side windows, they only block 71% of UVA light. The front windshield is fairly consistent. Side window protection ranged from 55% in 2013 BMW models to 96% in a 2011 Lexus. And it doesn't matter. Interestingly enough, tinting the windows does not block UVA light.
Right.
Again, front windshields, 2 layers of glass with UVA block in between. Side windows, single layer of glass, no UVA block. And the thing is then, you could get sunburned. And in fact, if you drive a lot, you could get a skin cancer on your arm from driving. And no one puts sunscreen on when they're going on a long trip.
Wow.
Just a thing to think about. Interestingly enough, there is a higher rate of melanomas on the left arm than the right arm in the U.S.
It would have been nice. I would have liked to have seen them do sunroofs.
Whether or not they block UVA?
Yeah, because, I mean, it's cool having a sunroof, right? But then you may actually be harming yourself by
you may have a higher rate of melanoma. Well, if you follow that, they had a UVA blocker in the front windshield, there would be no reason to put a UVA blocker in the sunroof.
Why? The sun, every once in a while you drive at noon.
You do, but if you're not going to put it in the side windows, why would you put it in the sunroof?
Well, you should put it in all the windows.
This may be where we're headed with this.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You know, if the sun's beating down on you from top, you know, some people like, I mean, you know, I get the whole convertible thing. I wasn't going to go there, but, or rolling the window down, you kind of lose the protection. But, you know, you would think if you're going to protect the front window, why would you not protect the windows all around equally? Use the same glass.
Because it's a lot cheaper, obviously, to use. That front windows has to be, front windshield has to be thick. The sides don't, so at least they don't. And here's the thing about melanoma.
Have you ever gotten a sunburn in the car?
I don't sunburn. I just really never do. So, no, I haven't.
Okay.
But what's interesting is the left arm has a higher rate of melanoma in the U.S., but it also has a higher rate of melanoma in Australia, and they drive on the left side of the road. So their right arm is the one that's hanging out. There's something about the left arm. More melanomas.
Was it? They're wondering if it's more their dominant arms.
I don't know. No, that doesn't make any sense.
Okay.
Because in the U.S., we have
thought about it.
Yeah, you slowed me down a minute, but I recovered. Melanoma survival rates, again, it was one of the most survival cancers at 92%. The problem is, in Kentucky, we don't do very well with it. Our melanoma diagnosis rate is 14% higher than the national average, and our death rate is number 6 in the nation. 136 people in Kentucky die of melanoma every year. That's the 6th highest death rate in the nation. So we really need to look at these windows. We need to look at any way we can try to protect against these skin cancers. Fascinating thing, the highest rates of death due to melanoma, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Utah, and the New England states. Among the lowest rates, Texas, Louisiana, Florida, in the second to lowest tier. It makes no sense to me. I do not understand melanoma. I never have, but I'm willing to admit that it would be nice to protect us from UVA radiation while we're driving in our car. Next up, the final dermatology thing, which you will like, Rick. This one actually makes some sense. This was the AMA Journal of Dermatology, published in May. A team from the University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine, they called these online dermatology sites. Now, you know, you've seen this thing from Kentucky Health One, where the guy gets up in the middle of the night, decides he needs to see a doc. He gets his car keys and pushes them to the back of the desk, pulls up his tablet, and he talks to the doctor on the TV screen.
Right. What they don't show you is he has to swipe his credit card first.
Right. He's got to pay for it. Well, there are general medicine websites like that, and this group from California, San Francisco, they looked at seven general medicine websites like that, and there were nine sites that were specifically dermatology sites. You can go online, you swipe your credit card, costs $35 to $95 to be seen, and the people at the University of California, San Francisco, they constructed cases that involved conditions like syphilis, things like skin cancers, things that really needed to be treated, and they went on TV to see what the outcomes were. They had 62 encounters, 16 direct-to-consumer telemedicine websites between February 4th and March 11th, 2016. So they just went out, did this, and then they published it. First of all, none of the sites asked for identification. None of them was worried about whether or not this was...
Yeah, they did. They wanted to make sure the name matched what was on the
card. They may have gotten credit cards, but
stress a common theme here.
Yeah, that you pay cash for this stuff.
This is not insurance-based treatment.
Of the 62 clinical encounters, two-thirds of them were assigned a clinician without any choice. They didn't say, which position would you like to see? They said, okay, next. 16% disclosed information about clinical licensure. I'm sorry, 16 cases, 26% disclosed the physician licensure. In most cases, when you go online, you don't know the qualifications of the doctor you're talking to.
Right.
Three-quarters of the cases you did not know.
They just know your credit card processed.
Right. This is going to be Rick's contribution to this segment of the show.
You got it.
Yeah.
You knew that was coming.
Yep. Only 23% collected the name of an existing primary care physician or offered to send records. I'm sorry, only 10% offered to send records. So when you go online to these places, they're not working with your other healthcare providers to provide a comprehensive coordinated care. They're just simply, okay, you paid your money. Here's what I think. Go away. That's it.
Bingo.
10% offered to send records to your doctor. A diagnosis was offered in 77%. Medications were ordered or recommended in two-thirds. Adverse effects of the medicines disclosed only a third of the time. Pregnancy risk only 40% of the time. Major diagnosis repeatedly missed. Things like syphilis, which must be treated with antibiotics. Polycystic ovary syndrome, which has many more manifestations other than skin. Those were missed, and the prescribed treatments were at odds with the existing guidelines. The point is, do not think that because something is electronic, it is necessarily superior. And it is convenient to go talk to these things. But if they do not have any relationship to your existing healthcare provider, and you're doing this in isolation, you are setting yourself up for a bad outcome. We need a coordinated healthcare system. If we're going to do this, we really need to do it right.
Yeah, I just these types of interactions are going to have to occur to drive the technology into the process that is healthcare, right? So we have to figure out a way to make some of these technologies lend themselves to increase the access to your healthcare systems. The problem is these initial, because of the regulatory and insurance rules and all the various practices or legal situations, we can't bill for a lot of things that are done via interactive video. Typically, they want you in the room with your physician. Now, in Kentucky, we have passed legislation that if you're a part of the state telehealth board, if you're one of the members of that, then you can actually do these types of interactions and be paid as you would in a face-to-face encounter. What we're seeing is you get these companies that come in and they want to do this type of interaction. They don't want to associate with the state board. And so to get around the payment issue, they basically just collect the credit card. And then, if this was done as part of the normal care delivery plan, right, and it was handled through the normal regulatory process, I'd be totally in favor of it. I just don't like the we see cash here and we can obtain, we can actually make money on this. So I always question, and Tony, this is the same reason we give the insurance companies down the road, right? They make $100 million bonuses and these massive, this massive amount of profit. That's what all this is. This is sucking out profit out of the healthcare system. This is taking advantage of people that are in essentially a situation where they're willing to plop down $50.
It does not. And when they do cash, they are not subject to a lot of the quality measures that
the insurance companies
or Medicare, Medicaid mandate. So,
well, and there's who knows what the T's and C's, terms and conditions that you probably have to agree to that waive your right to legal action. Right. So who knows?
Right.
What's going on there?
Some of these sites that the California group looked at, they actually had internationally based physicians without California licenses.
Well,
doing.
Of course.
So in terms of legal action, you're taking legal action against a physician who doesn't even live in the United States.
Right. So, I mean, again, I just think that the problem is this process has to play itself out over the next 10 to 20 years such that we get the technology mature enough to embed itself into the healthcare process that it can do good for the people who can use it. The other thing, too, is 20 years ago, I did not have a phone that could do video conferencing, right? I just didn't have it. In Eastern Kentucky, it was even a bigger joke, right? Because we barely had phone lines 20 years ago. I mean, when I moved to Kentucky 26 years ago, somebody quoted a stat that like 13% of the people in Eastern Kentucky still didn't have access to telephone, right? Just because of the rural nature of the environments. Of course, cellular has helped that tremendously now. So those folks have phone coverage, but it's all because we've put wireless coverage over, that's blanketed the mountains. But this technology just could not find its way onto your smartphone, even if the smartphone was in your belly.
Well, it's certainly not going to find its way there.
Right, yeah. So, I just think that this technology will find its way into healthcare. It obviously will be part of your doctor's, if it's right for your provider to do this, to follow up, to get questions, it'll happen. Unfortunately, we got to deal with these money grabs as part of the process.
Be careful about being an early adopter. The technology, as Rick says, this has not been standardized. We have a lot of unanswered questions about seeing people on the TV screen. It certainly is going to be a mainstay.
You didn't have anything else, right?
I did. One more thing.
Was it something that you have to do?
I absolutely have to.
Oh,
this is a drug thing. It's even worse.
Then I'm out.
This is about fluoroquinolones. These are medicines like Avalox, Cipro, Levaquin, and moxifloxacin injections. These are medicines we use commonly to treat sinus infections and bladder infections. The FDA says they are too dangerous to do that. You can get tendon rupture and tendon irritation, a lot of problems with the nervous system and central nervous system with these drugs. The FDA said, look, save these for severe infections. Do not treat simple bladder infections, simple sinus infections, and simple bronchitis with medicines like Levaquin and Cipro. They are too powerful and have too many side effects for that. Rick, get us off the air.
Special thanks to our summer Morehead State Public Radio producer, Tanner Boyd, and to Eric Bilber, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember,
the FDA is advising against listening to radio shows such as Health Matters for treating three common illnesses: bronchitis, sinus infections, and urinary tract infections.
The agency issued the new recommendations after a safety review revealed that Health Matters can cause disabling and potentially permanent side effects that affect the tendons, muscles, joints, nerves, and central nervous system.
The FDA convened an expert advisory panel to review evidence on the safety of using Health Matters to treat common infections. In the end, the 21-member panel voted overwhelmingly that in most cases, the benefit was outweighed by rare but serious harms, including
irregular heartbeats,
depression,
nerve damage,
ruptured tendons,
and seizures.
Currently, those three illnesses account for nearly one-third of all Health Matters shows outside of hospitals in the U.S. That overprescribing of the potent radio shows is exposing patients to needless risk. While Health Matters is essential for treating serious infections, other work just as well for common infections with less risk.
Whatever you do, do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week as I lash out at disrespect shown for U.S. ophthalmologists. I lash out.
Nice.
Thank you very much. On Morehead State Public Radio.